Real talk. Sometimes life throws decisions our way that feel impossible to navigate. That's where a little guidance can make all the difference. At Psychic Source, our trusted psychics go beyond basic predictions. They provide real insight, helping you understand your situation, see your options clearly, and take confident next steps. Your reading is always private and judgment-free, so whether you're facing a crossroads in love, career, or life's bigger questions, you'll get honest, compassionate advice in a safe space. And the best part? Our psychics are available 24/7 by phone, chat, or video, whenever you need them. Plus, we stand by our readings. If you're not satisfied, it's free. Because when you have greater wisdom, you can create a better outcome. Ready to take control of your future? Get a reading for just 83 cents per minute, plus 3 minutes free. Visit PsychicSource.com and use promo code HELLO to get started. Psychic Source, insight when you need it most.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution in conversation with Ricochet, a very helpful discourse on federalism in many areas. However, I'm going to focus on something that Richard says towards the end of the interview about the contest, the competition, the challenge between the classical liberal, Richard Epstein, the professor, and the New Deal progressives or their inheritors today in the 22nd century. As I understand it, Richard, the way you present it is, classical liberals are concerned with excessive state power and prefer an easy hand when it comes to the state power. The New Dealers, and I'm going back now to 1937, were interested in establishing what we can call today monopolies or national cartels. Who is ahead in this contest, if 1937 to 2022? Has it tipped one way or another? Because you say balance is very difficult to maintain.
Yes. Look, I mean, it turns out the Commerce Clause at the federal level had to worry about two issues. One is, could state block the movement of interstate commerce by putting excessive safety regulations that made it impossible to ship goods? And the progressives, for the most part, are not in favor of balkanization. And so they support, A, the ability of Congress to open up these things. And strangely, Congress never does that. And so there was a development known as the Dormant Commerce Clause, where if you can show that a local regulation had a very powerful impact on the movement of goods across state lines, you have to justify it by showing some kind of environmental interest. It's the kind of balancing test that we just talked about in connection with the Bremerton case. And for the most part, the conservatives and the liberals did pretty well on that together. And one of the ironies is one of the strongest opinions on this stuff was written by Robert Jackson, very strong Dormant Commerce Clause guy. And yet he was the guy, when it came to the exertion of federal power, who was the champion of federal monopolies. So on the other issue, the classical liberal, when it comes to federal power, says we want to make sure that it is listed to making sure that you can open up boundaries or borders between the states and make sure that the transportation takes place. But what we don't want you to do is to be able to regulate prices inside each state by controlling manufacture, mining, or agriculture. The New Deal is like cartels, and so if you go back and you start looking at the 1930s, what's going on is that labor used to be regulated before the 1930s. In interstate commerce under the Railway Labor Act. And then it turns out afterwards it's the National Labor Relations Act, which regulates just about any business whatsoever. There's a huge expansion in that. With respect to agriculture, there was no federal regulation, except maybe over exports. But then what happens is you now get the Wicked and Tilghman case written by Justice Jackson himself. And what you decide is that the federal government can restrict the output of every farm. And it turns out that therefore you cannot, unless you get federal permission, feed your own corn to your own cows. Why did they do this? Because it turned out this was a fairly substantial business. If you, in fact, allow domestic stuff to take place outside federal control, you will be able to increase the total amount of agricultural output, which will prevent the cartel from taking place. So you have to shut all this stuff down. And the classical liberal says, look, The biggest mistake they ever made in the New Deal was expanding the scope of the Commerce Clause so you could have cartels in agriculture, you could have cartels in labor, you could have cartels in motor vehicle transportation, you could have cartels in aviation, you could have cartels wherever somebody could think of something to cartel on. And the Roosevelt people were maniac cartel foremen. They did it hundreds of times. The only restraint that they put on these cartels is they often gave them a relatively short life because they didn't want that power to devolve upon Congress if it turned out Congress changed hands and became Republican, as happened in 1938.
One detail, Professor, I want to understand. When JFK vouchsafed the unionization of public unions, is that permitting a cartel, or are you using that word in the same fashion?
Yes, absolutely. What he did is he was willing to organize a cartel against him. At the time, it was not clear whether or not the federal government could actually regulate the activities of state agencies. Under dual federalism, they could not. And so what happened is he does this, and then within a matter of weeks, all of a sudden you get things like the Taylor Act in New York, and now you have unionization for teachers, policemen, firemen, and so forth. That's not a federalism issue, but it turned out to be another total disaster. You'd never want to give people who have essential powers over the rest of the country the power to go out on strike. They say, oh, we can never go on strike. It's only compulsory arbitration that we have to agree to. But it turns out they always go on strike, and it turns out the remedies are very, very bad. So if you're trying to figure out the single worst thing about the Kennedy legacy, it was the creation of unions for government by example. Roosevelt, for example, back in 1932, was very much against this. He thought, in effect, that you don't have a real opposition like you do when a firm is being unionized by a big, strong union. What you do is you get the federal government, which will roll over and die, and that's exactly what happens with state unions. It turns out these state guys get enough money that they can support the campaigns of those people who in government support them and oppose those who do not.
We have 30 seconds, Professor.
So the great tragedy of America in this area is we have unions on both sides of the bargaining table. So the classical liberal essentially says private monopolies are risky, but they tend to dissolve. State-supported monopolies are much more dangerous because they don't wear out over time by new entry. And new entry is the solvent, and what the New Deal is trying to do is to block it at every turn.
Professor Richard Epstein, the Hoover Institution, interviewing at Ricochet, the hosts Kara Kandel and Gerard Robinson. I recommend the listen. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.